Okay, so welcome back again. We'll continue our tour around the diamond and arriving at the pinnacle this afternoon, the pinnacle being equanimity. And in that diamond model, it's you can think that when the compassion and the joy are completely in balance, we get that ease of mind, that balance and stability, where we're not grasping after the pleasant, repelled by the unpleasant, but just totally accepting of what is. So equanimity can be practiced on deeper and deeper levels until ultimately it becomes the highest and the deepest peace, the highest and deepest peace of Nibbana itself. A heart and mind that is completely free. And it's possible that that sounds very challenging or even unrealistic. You know, I love the idea of equanimity, but you don't know my neighbor from hell. Or you don't know my ex-partner or my boss or so many different ways, so many different things that we think get in the way of equanimity. But there's a phrase I read from one teacher recently, I think it was Eugene Cash, where he said, if it's in the way, it is the way. And I love that because it just so shows this tendency to think, well, if only I didn't have the neighbor from hell, then I could really practice. If only it wasn't for my ex-partner, then I'd really be able to develop equanimity. It's all out there, but as I said right at the start, the power of these practices is that they unhook us from being dependent on conditions out there being a certain way and cultivate their inner resources for us to experience happiness and ease, contentment and peace, independent of what is happening in the circumstances of our lives. And the good news is that, like all the others, this is a quality that can be developed. It can be practiced and cultivated. And that's what we're going to be doing this afternoon. And I also want to mention what equanimity is not, because sometimes people have a misperception that it means some kind of neutral, flat, blank, grayed out, non-responsive kind of state. And in popular culture, for example, people say things like, oh, they were being very zen. And usually they mean just kind of sitting there doing nothing while some kind of crisis is going on. That's not actually, as I'm sure you know, not real zen, but there's this image of equanimity means sitting like a stone. But that's actually a form of ignorance, delusion, or denial, and it's not what we're going for here. True equanimity is actually a very refined form of responsiveness, and it's underpinned by wisdom, so it sees very clearly what's going on and then knows an appropriate response. There's wisdom to it. It's not deadness or disconnection or disengagement, but there is a stability to it that feels quite different from our more usual habits of reactivity. So one analogy that might help explain this is I sometimes think of equanimity as being like the keel of a sailing boat. Many years ago, I had the opportunity to live on board and help restore a wooden sailing boat. It was out of the water when we bought it, and part of my job was to strip the anti-fouling paint off and repaint this keel. And the boat was fairly small, but the keel was enormous. And when it was out of the water, I was thinking, why does this boat need such a huge keel? But once it got in the water, I understood it's the weight of the keel that helps the boat to sail, that helps it to steer. Without that keel, it would just bob around and it would capsize. So the keel is, the boat is still responsive to the wind and the waves and the tides and all of that. It still is responding. And sometimes, in conditions, it sails very hard over, almost at the edge of capsizing, but the keel helps it to stay stable and to not capsize. So in the same way, We can develop that flexibility that allows us to respond to conditions, but the equanimity keeps us stable and balanced. And in the beginning, because equanimity is more subtle and more refined, it can be quite hard to notice. So we might need to begin by noticing when equanimity is not present. When equanimity is absent, we can go, okay, yep, got that, there's reactivity here. And then we can begin to pay attention to that. So again, this same pattern of seeing the obstacles is what helps us. Once we see the obstacles and can clear them out, then we make room for the equanimity to come in. And just to again emphasize that this is the pretty high level of practice, and it appears throughout the Buddha's teachings as a very, very important quality. You could say it's an aspect of Nibbana itself, as I said earlier. It appears in many of the Buddha's different lists. As many of you know, the Buddha taught a lot with numbered lists to help the memory. So it appears as in the 10 parami, the 10 perfections, the qualities of character that we can particularly cultivate in daily life. Equanimity is number 10 on that list. It's last on the list. It appears also in the 7 factors of awakening. So equanimity is actually a quality of the awakened heart and mind. And in the list of the 7 factors of awakening, it's number 7. So again, it's in last place. And in the same with this list of the 4 Brahmaviharas, equanimity is number 4. So each time there's a sense that we're working towards this quality of equanimity. So perhaps that sounds okay. How do we actually practice it? In traditional equanimity practice, as with all the other forms of the Brahmaviharas, we use certain phrases that we recite silently to cultivate this balance. And mostly they're phrases about opening to and accepting the truth of how things are. So, for example, Jack Kornfield: "May I learn to see the arising and passing of all things with equanimity and balance." So I mentioned earlier that the word equanimity, upeka, literally means to overlook, to look over. So there's that sense of space and distance, capacity to see more evenly and not just from our own tunnel vision. Kamala Masters, her phrase is, "May I accept and open to how it is right now, because this is how it is right now." And you notice she says "right now," because it's not like, "Meh, this is how it is. Yeah, this is how it is. Okay, it's how it is." You know, it's not that kind of resigned, defeated acceptance. It's appreciating in this moment, this is how it is right now. And we're holding the understanding that things change. So the truth of impermanence at the same time. Another phrase she uses, "No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are." So again, there's this opening to, you could say, not self, in the sense that we can't control things much as we want to. As she says, "No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are." So earlier we were talking about the desire to fix things, to get involved, to interfere in some way. This equanimity practice is about settling back, accepting things as they are, noticing that impulse to get in and manipulate and do things, seeing if we can settle back and wait until we can see more clearly. So again, it's not about not responding, it's not about doing nothing, but it's giving ourselves the space and the perspective to see clearly before we act. And again, equanimity, like all the other Brahmaviharas, is a purification practice. So when we start to incline the heart and mind in that direction, we start to connect with the things that get in the way. And so if you notice that happening in your own practice as you're invited to connect with this spaciousness, and you feel some kind of clamping down or contraction, remember ABC, a bigger container. Can I make space for that? Make a bigger field for this challenging energy to be in. So I'd like to offer a guided meditation on working with equanimity for ourselves and really exploring what the Taoists call the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. So we see these two wings of the diamond, and just getting that perspective on our own lives, all the journeys that we've been through and the highs and the lows, connecting with both compassion and joy and then bringing them together as equanimity. So that will be what we'll explore now and then see how it goes.